Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Taboo Fetish Talk Radio.
Radio. We broadcast every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, the Foxy Miss Moxie, and joining me tonight is Sir Crow.
Hi.
We'd like to give a big thank you to Sydney Screams and Miss Whitney Morgan of the original Taboo Fetish Talk Radio for their continuing efforts to bring you the best in kinky talk radio. Without them, this show and the other shows on the network would not be possible. There are two ways to contact us tonight. If you're listening live, which you probably are, you can scroll to the bottom of your screen and you'll see the chat window there. Or you can give us a call at area code 213-943-3601. Again, that was area code 213-943-3601. Your participation is welcomed and very much encouraged. Now, if you'd like to figure out how to get in touch with me directly at any time, not during show hours, you can contact me by emailing me at msmox@mistressmoxie.com. That's msmox at MistressMoxie.com. Please follow me on Twitter at Ms. Moxie. Let me spell that one for you because it's spelled differently. So that's at MSMOXXXI. I'd love to have you as a friend on Facebook. Go ahead and log on to facebook.com/MsMox.findom. That's msmox.findomme. Of course, most of us are a part of FetLife. So if you want to find me over there at FetLife, my name on FetLife is flogging_moxie. That's flogging, FLOGGING underscore MOXIE. And our friend Sir Crow, you can find him over on FetLife. His username is Crows Nevermore. That's CROWSNEVERMORE. All right, so that's how to get in touch with us. I'll repeat those throughout the night. We want to give you a few reminders here to tune in throughout the week. We're not the only show broadcasting on the Taboo Fetish Talk Radio, so be sure to tune in throughout the week for our other shows. Tuesday nights, join Blood as he brings you the bloodshed. Thursday nights, tune in for the original Taboo Fetish Talk with Sydney Screams and Miss Whitney Morgan. And then, of course, we've got Frisky Fridays with me, Foxy Mix. I can't even speak. Foxy Miss Moxie. It's a tongue twister. And, of course, Sir Crow. One thing we wanted to let you guys know is that Taboo Fetish Talk Radio is looking for other hosts to join our network. If you're interested in becoming a host of your own show with Taboo Fetish Talk Radio, please visit us on the web. That's TabooFetishTalkRadio.com or send an email to TabooFetishTalk@gmail.com. We want to let you know that there's two different types of show hosts that we're looking for at this time. You can be a one-time radio show host. So that would be hosting a one-time, 1 or 2 hour radio program where you can discuss whatever you want to regarding the adult industry, whether it's fetish, porn, politics. You can personally promote yourself, whatever you like. And then we're looking for some long-term weekly show hosts as well. We're looking for people to host a weekly radio show for 1 or 2 hours each week during a specific time slot. And, of course, again, you can discuss whatever you please, whether that's, like we said, anything that has to do with the adult industry, fetish porn, personal promotion, what have you. And either those can be live shows or pre-recorded shows, and you can vary that from week to week if you want to. And tonight's show is the first of a three-part series that we're doing. We're going to be talking about BDSM for the next couple of weeks. Popular topic, huge fetish community. Tonight we're going to start with the beginning of what puts the B in BDSM. And I thought it was just bondage, but then I've, through doing my research, come to find out that bondage and discipline are both included in that. So bondage and discipline put the B in BDSM. See, I always assumed that the D.
I thought it was just domination.
Well, yeah, it. Well,
bondage, domination, submission. I never.
Well, I had always heard, I had always assumed, unfortunately, incorrectly, that the D stood for discipline. So I always thought it was bondage, discipline, and sadomasochism. Turns out that it's actually bondage, then dominance and submissiveness, then sadomasochism.
Learn something new every day.
Exactly, yeah. So we are going to be learning a lot of new stuff tonight about bondage and discipline.
Yay, bondage!
I'd love it if you guys would give us a call and then share some of your experiences with us tonight. Or if you're in the chat room. Hi, Blood. Blood's in the chat room.
Two other random guests.
So a couple of guests joining us tonight as well. If you guys have any questions for us, if we don't know the answer, we'll try to find the answer for you.
Google's a wonderful tool.
Google is a wonderful tool. Before we jump into the bondage and discipline aspect of tonight's show, I came across two things on the web earlier that I thought were kind of entertaining, and they relate in a way to, you know, the sex industry or fetishes or something like that. And unfortunately, my computer is not operating at the moment properly, so I can't pull up these two stories that I wanted to discuss with you. So bear with me just a second.
It's a Mac.
Just because it's a Mac doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. Okay. So for those of you that don't know, we broadcast from the Central Florida area. I know we've got listeners all across the country and a couple in other countries as well. And something came up in our local news that I found interesting. It's about a crime that someone committed. There was a couple of incidences that happened here. The reason I'm bringing it up is because the alleged perpetrator, happens to have a particular fetish. A man with a criminal habit of posing as a modeling agent to satisfy his foot fetish was arrested in an attack on a woman near the University of Central Florida. According to the Orange County Sheriff's Office, 35-year-old John Capio of New York approached a woman standing outside of a bar and told her he could help her make a lot of money if she became a foot model. I find this interesting. Capio asked her to follow him to his car. We had business cards. Deputies say. Capio faces charges of battery, exposure of sexual organs, and false imprisonment regarding this attack, which occurred in April outside the Little Hookah Bar, which I don't know where the Little Hookah Bar is. The only hookah bar I know of over in that area.
Lit up. I think that's the... No.
Well, it doesn't really matter. So as they entered the parking lot, the woman didn't want to go any further and asked Capio for his phone number instead. He then grabbed her arm and walked deeper into the lot. The woman said she didn't scream because she was scared and she just didn't know what to do. Then it got even creepier when Capio allegedly led her to his car, grabbed her foot, pulled down his shorts and touched his genitals to her foot. This is ridiculous. You know, this guy could have avoided a lot of a lot of trouble if he would just maybe have gotten his thrills for his fetish a different way, say maybe attending the Orlando Foot Party that's coming up
this
Sunday
weekend.
Night. That's right. It's Sunday night. So here's what I'm going to recommend for all of you out there who have a foot fetish. Don't be like Capio. Don't become a criminal. Don't do anything stupid or crazy. What you want to do is log on to OrlandoFootParty.com and find out about their event they have coming up on Sunday. I'm not sure exactly the time frame, but it's going to be, I think it might be 6:00. I'm not real sure. Whitney, if you can let us know, that'd be great. So log on to OrlandoFootParty.com. Miss Whitney Morgan, one of the hosts of the original Taboo Fetish Talk, is going to be modeling her gorgeous tootsies there, as well as the ever fabulous Miss Sydney Screams. The two of them are going to be there.
6 p.m. to 12 a.m.
6 p.m. to 12 a.m. That's great. Thank you, Whitney. I appreciate it. So, yeah, don't be like this Capio guy. Don't be a crazy criminal pervert. Get your kicks, so to speak, at the Orlando Foot Party this weekend. That's Sunday from 6 to 12 p.m. It's at the Woodshed in Orlando. For directions to the Woodshed, you can log on to the OrlandoFootParty.com website, I'm sure, or you can also visit thewoodshedorlando.com. for information on anything regarding that event coming up on Sunday. So, who all's in chat room tonight? Whitney's with us. We love you, Whitney. Blood's with us. We want to say hi to Dallas. A couple of guests online. And we're going to, I guess, move ahead to another little story that I found, which I think is super crazy, maybe not as crazy as Capio trying to lure a woman into his
car.
Foot prison. I don't know how else to put it. But we all know some people love, some people hate the book 50 Shades of Grey. It's out there. It's a bestseller. Not much we can do about the misinformation given in the book. I know that it doesn't. I haven't read the book personally myself.
Me either.
You haven't read it either. I don't know that much about it other than what people have told me in their review of it. And I know that it has spawned a lot of different industries associating themselves with the book. I know you've got an entire sex toy line now going on.
Really?
Yeah. You can. I've seen it. I've at the Fairvilla Mega Store here in Central Florida in Orlando. I've seen they've got little floggers and crops and other little toys associated.
Are they like quality or are they like?
They are. I'm going to say this. They are for beginners. They are a quality you would find in a toy for beginners.
Okay.
That's my review of the toys. I haven't read the book. I'm going to say the book's for beginners as well. But so I know that there are different products now associated with this book. What I came across today that I find extremely disturbing, there are people out there trying to sort of jump on the 50 Shades bandwagon, so to speak, by making their own products on different websites like Etsy and other sites where eBay, you know, stuff where you can buy handmade items or stuff like that. So here's what I found today. 50 Shades of Grey baby clothes. Yes, indeed. So maybe 50 Shades of Grey didn't spark the baby boom that was expected. It's inspired some very disturbing baby clothes, however. Onesies and baby tees stitched with quotes like, "My mommy pretends Christian Grey is my daddy," are popping up on the web on retail sites like Etsy, and skeeving the pants off of grown-ups everywhere. There was a time not so long ago when people were embarrassed to be caught reading pulp erotica fiction in public, and now we're advertising it on our newborns. There's nothing wrong with some light BDSM reading. Heck, even some light BDSM. We're all for that. But please, can we leave the children out of this? This is going too far, people. I am not happy to find out that there are now baby clothes inspired by 50 Shades of Grey. What do you think about that? What do you think, Crow?
Head explode. I guess it's like any other fad. You're going to have people who get caught up in it and don't realize, maybe this isn't the most appropriate. I would dress my kids in crazy shit, but not in 50 Shades of Grey clothing. And
I think the farthest I would go as far as dressing a small child that's unable to dress themselves or maybe understand what they're wearing is maybe put them in something with a skull on it or a skeleton,
yeah,
or you know what I mean? Something along those lines, something kind of cute to see on a child. But I'm sorry, but anywhere, 50 Shades of Grey and a child, not cute.
No.
Not cute at all. One of the funnier 50 Shades things, though, you told me about recently that you saw was a Halloween costume.
Which one? There's a lot of Halloween costumes.
Halloween costume that was made out of paint chips.
Oh. Yeah. That one wasn't really appropriate. I don't know why people would be wearing, there's people.
Okay. I'm not sure that you're following what I'm saying. You told me a story recently about someone who dressed up as the book 50 Shades of Grey by going and getting a whole bunch of paint chips in different shades of gray from Home Depot
or
something like that, and then attached them to their body and went as 50 Shades of Grey. I think that's hysterical.
I thought you were talking about the stuff at Spirit, all those 50 Shades-based stuff. Oh, yeah, the actual like little swatches of different colors, which is kind of amusing.
I think that's funny. So that's all I'm going to say about 50 Shades tonight. Don't dress your kids in 50 Shades clothing, please. If you do, prepare to be ridiculed by me if I ever see it. I have no problems walking up to a parent and saying, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And tonight's topic, if in case you guys are wondering, because we've been rambling on a little bit here, the news, every once in a while you come across something that's fun. But neither one of those were really fun. They were just information things I wanted to throw out there. The guy with the foot fetish kidnapping women. So please, ladies, be careful. If a guy walks up to you somewhere and says, oh, I'm a modeling agent, or oh, I'm this, or oh, I'm that, unless you're at an adult-themed event or an industry event or something like that, don't follow this guy anywhere. Maybe write down your number or something like that. Don't be dumb. Don't follow people anywhere, because the next thing you know, your foot's on their dick and the cops are being called.
Yeah. And for the guys, don't be a creeper, please. It makes us all look bad.
So BDSM is going to be our topic for the next couple weeks, guys. Tonight we're going to delve into what puts the B in BDSM, and that's bondage and discipline. So here, I've got a couple of things I want to talk about bondage and discipline specifically. These are really two aspects of BDSM that relate to one another, so they're kind of grouped together in the category of BDSM. See, I always thought they were separate. I always assumed that bondage and discipline were two separate aspects, but it makes sense to me now that I've been doing some research and learning a little bit more that they're grouped together. Excuse me. Because of the types of activities that are involved is why they're grouped together. They have conceptual similarities, and that's why they appear jointly. Contrary to the other type, other two types involved in BDSM. Bondage and discipline do not define tops and bottoms themselves, whereas in sadomasochism, there's clearly a defined top and a defined bottom. And it's used to describe the general activities with either partner being the receiver or the giver. The term bondage itself describes the practice of physical restraining. It's usually, but not always, a sexual practice. And I think that if you go out to, let's say, our local dungeon here in town, the Woodshed Orlando, you're not going to find sexual practices going on there, but you're going to find a lot of bondage.
Yes. There's a lot of bondage.
You're going to find a lot of bondage. You're going to find a lot of discipline happening. So it can be sort of a precursor, let's say.
It's a warm-up.
A warm-up to sexual activity. Bondage is very popular within the larger range of the BDSM community, and it's nevertheless sometimes it's differentiated from the rest in the field. Studies among BDSM practitioners in the United States themselves have shown that about half of all men find the idea of bondage to be erotic. Half of all men in the United States find the practice of bondage to be sexually erotic. I find that fascinating.
A little bit.
Fascinating at 50%. I actually thought the number would be a little higher. I know that maybe you might have, you know, misconceptualized what I was thinking and thought that maybe I would think the number was lower. But I got to be honest, when I walk into an adult store and you see all the different kinds of restraints and all the different and stuff like that, I would think that even for people who aren't hardcore into the BDSM community, at some point in their adult sexual activity, they have experienced, practiced, or tried some form of bondage.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean,
unless you're 100% vanilla, there's a period in your, I would say, your sexual growth that you've wanted to tie someone up or tie someone down.
Or even just, you know, handcuffs, fuzzy handcuffs. You
can fuzzy get handcuffs.
And I mean, that's something you go to the Spencer's
a
and it's scarf. All over.
A scarf, a men's tie, something like that.
I suppose a blindfold in a way. I mean,
a blindfold.
In a roundabout way, maybe.
Bondage means binding the partner by tying their appendages together specifically. For example, like you just said, using something like handcuffs or by lashing them to an object in particular. Bondage can also be achieved by spreading the appendages and fastening them with chains to a St. Andrew's cross or spreader bars.
We have spreader bars.
We do have, we do have spreader bars. I like them. You like them. St. Andrew's cross, we use that at the Woodshed. Don't have the space in the house to put one of those right now, but maybe one day.
But I mean, as you said, I mean, we discussed how bondage generally goes very much hand in hand with, you know, other acts of, you know, BDSM. A lot of people use St. Andrew's cross. You'll get tied to one or a spanking bench or something like that, and you know, they'll bust out floggers or whips, dragon tails, anything like that. And it just gives you, you know, you now have multiple facets of it. So bondage definitely does lead into other parts of it. It's not just, you know, I like bondage. Or, I mean, there are people who do just like bondage for the sake of bondage and don't want to move past any of it. But there's a lot of people who, you know, when you go past bondage, you still have to go back to it.
Yeah, because you got to think that you're using bondage and other practices in BDSM, whether it's discipline, sadism, and masochism. At some point, you're using bondage in those aspects of it as well. So a little bit different than bondage is discipline. And I got to be honest, I didn't realize that it was a separate category. The term discipline describes the physiological restraining with the use of rules and punishment to control overt behavior. Punishment can be the pain caused physically, such as something like caning, maybe. Humiliation caused psychologically, such as like maybe flogging somebody in public or something like that, or a loss of freedom caused physically, like chaining your typical bottom to the bed in some way, or restraining them to the bed, so to speak. And it's a way, and I guess the discipline, from what I've been able to learn and figure out here, is a way of a structured way that you're training your bottom into practices that appeal to you or appeal to them. It's more of a the training aspect of bondage.
It's discipline. I mean, in its simple sense of the word, discipline means, you know, to get them to do something correctly or in a specific fashion.
For a lot of people, I guess, arousal in bondage comes from the fantasy aspect of it. I'd say for a lot more vanilla people, it would. Or the act of being the bottom and being physically restrained or tied up. You know, this is a link to submissive behavior quite a bit, I would say. For many people, the bondage is a physical manifestation of a desire to give up control to another. Bondage can be an act as a permanent reminder to the bound person that they no longer control what is happening to them. The sensations of being bound can also be arousing in their own right, as it can stress the body and give the bound person something to struggle against. Bondage can also cause pressure on parts, very specific parts of the body, which can be pleasurable. For example, mummification would be an example of that, in which, you know, you're going through and binding the entire body or wrapping the body in some way to put pressure on very specific triggers of the body.
Like, where exactly would, like, somewhere become pleasurable that you would, like, you know, wrap someone up? Oh, wait, we have a caller. Pretty sure it's Whitney.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is, too. Give us just a second. We're going to go ahead and take a call. Hi, area 407, you're on the air.
Hi, it is me. We're right.
Hi, sweetheart. I'm so glad to hear from you. This is our girl, Whitney Morgan, in case you guys remember me.
How are you doing? God damn, my phone's breaking up like hardcore. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic.
I'm worried about you.
I'm doing fantastic. My voice is coming back. It's a little low tonight, so maybe it's a little sexier. I don't know. And I do.
You got a sexy voice going on, definitely. I like it.
Maybe it'll stay this way whenever you get throat or laryngitis, something like that. You get that weird, or a bit nasty cold, you get that weird sexy voice. You know, I'm always reminded of that the Friends where Phoebe got a cold and all of a sudden she could sing really well. And
yeah,
actually,
you know, so we'll have to do karaoke then, huh?
I'm ready to go out and belt out some tunes. And then, of course, I still got the broke toe.
Oh, my goodness. What are we going to do with you?
Really?
We're going to have an intervention.
talking medical, just ridiculous. Like, you could write a textbook on me.
Yes, definitely.
They could put me in a lab and study me for the next 10 years and still not figure out how these things happen to me.
It's okay. It's half the fun.
Okay. How are you doing, my dear?
I'm doing pretty decent. Good. A little cough, but whatever.
Okay. I hope you didn't pick it up from me. If you've got a little bit of a cough, take care of yourself, sweetie. Hot tea.
I'm actually blaming Goddess Ecstasy because I've had it since we were in Miami with her, so I'm blaming her.
Oh, it's all, maybe it isn't. Maybe you gave it to me.
I'm sorry.
But hey, hot tea, lemon, and throw some whiskey in there. You'll have a great night, and you'll get rid of your cough.
Delicious. I plug my phone and hopefully this will help it a little bit. Can you hear me any better on here? Because I'm trying to like rig my phone to make it sound better.
Honey, you're coming loud and clear. Don't worry about it. I haven't noticed any hiccups or anything like that.
It's been having issues. So bondage this evening, huh? One of my favorites.
Bondage is so much fun for most of us who are in the community and in the adult industry and stuff like that. I think it's almost the thing that got us going and got us started.
it's one of the things that really became more socially acceptable, and really, as far as like adult sites go too, it's one of them that really generated a lot of the fetish sites too. So it's kind of gone both ways of helping the community out.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, I can think back to the first time that someone decided that they were going to restrain me in some way, and how exciting that was, to the thought that, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to move my arms or use my hands, or all of a sudden becoming submissive in that position, or the first time I tied someone up and feeling the power involved with that.
Too, where you really have to be trusting of the person too, because once you're tied up, they really have free will to do whatever they want to. So it's another thing that really it brings the sensuality and the sexuality and the closeness of one another out then too, because you're giving yourself to them. They're taking all, you know, making you as vulnerable as possible, and they're, you know, in order to trust somebody enough to do that, you have to be really close to them. Or really turned on.
Really turned on, yeah.
So just fucking tie me up already.
Just tie me up and get this, let's get going. Do you have like a fond memory? Like, you think back and you're like, oh, I remember when that guy tied me up for the first time.
What is my very first really fetish experience? I mean, even while I was still a virgin, even. This, I guess, my very, very first boyfriend was a bit of a kinkster, and he's only about a year older than me, so it wasn't like a huge gap in how he had a significant, nothing like the 50 Shades of Grey. I've listened to half of it, and that was enough. Although I definitely... I'd say reading it, just because we're in the industry, and to be familiar with all the kind of stuff that's going on with it and all the controversy that's going on with it, I'll get around to listening to the other half.
Yeah, but I'll get around to it eventually as well. I've just put it off for as long as I possibly could, but I think I'm at a point now where I'm going to have to go ahead and either get it on audio or download it to the Kindle or something like that. And it's not exactly something I want to pay for. Maybe there's somebody out there that already owns it.
I have it on audio on my iPhone, and Miss Sydney Screams has it, I believe. I don't know if it's on her MacBook or her iPad.
Okay.
But there's a way to transfer it to you. She transferred it to me, so I know she can transfer it to you, or I can do it to you somehow.
Money on it.
We'll figure it out. It's not worth paying for.
Oh, I don't want to. I don't want to give money to the author and the company that published it, because from the people I know that are hardcore in the industry, nothing but bad reviews. So I don't want to be handing over my hard-earned money for something.
I did learn a little bit of information on that, the fact that she actually wrote it as, I guess she was a fan of, damn it, what's the vampire thing that's really popular?
Twilight.
Twilight. She was a big fan of Twilight and wrote it as fan fiction, and they were originally vampires in it. And she had it online, just as, you know, self-written erotica for everybody to read for free. And she was getting such good reviews on it from other people that were interested in the Twilight fan fiction that she ended up pulling it and sending it to a publishing company. So it has been online for a while for free.
Okay, well, good for her for, you know, finding her niche, and I'm sure she's made millions and millions now. I just wish she would have done her research a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely something that should have gone on.
So the amount of information I was able to find was outstanding on anything that related to BDSM. I mean, it's not hard.
It's out there.
Exactly.
Your library probably has books.
And if your library doesn't have books, then hey, go down to the woodshed and check out their library.
Yeah.
See, that's a much better library altogether. I'd much rather go there anyways, because then you don't have to sort through all the crap to get to the kink.
Yeah, right, exactly. You don't have to read halfway through the book or skip chapters just trying to get to the good parts.
I just want the juicy parts, I swear.
It's like I think my first erotica was finding old penthouses or something like that in my uncle's attic, reading the penthouse letters.
Yes.
That was my first venture into literotica and any kind of erotic writings and stuff like that. Boy, was that a way to start. But
dove right in.
So that probably led me down my path. It made me who I am today. So I had boyfriends that tied me up, and you said that you had one who was just about a year older than you.
Probably not even a whole year older than me. So I was kind of surprised that he actually knew how to.
Oh, wow.
I mean, being 16 and knowing really how to do rope work was kind of shocking at the time, but thrilling.
And extremely hot.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, I probably have him to thank for becoming who I was. I mean, I was always a little bit of a kinkster or a little bit more of a darker-minded individual when I was younger, but hadn't really let loose to that extent. And he was a switch as well. So he did teach me quite a bit and then would actually talk me through how to tie him up properly.
Oh, fantastic. I wonder if he was a Boy Scout.
You wonder if what?
He was a Boy Scout. That's where he...
He wasn't a Boy Scout, actually. He was, no, he was, he would have been the type that would have gotten kicked out of Boy Scouts.
I missed that. Well, I was a Boy Scout when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
I missed that night. So I never...
You missed the...
I missed the night that we went over all the knots.
So you never got around to tying knots in Boy Scouts.
I know.
Well, you've got to get in touch with the woodshed next time they have one their roped classes, because I know that their rope classing is very extensive. That it's, you know, several months at a time. It's not just a one night event. So maybe we'll have to hook you up with that.
Yeah, I'm gonna get some of that.
I think they're starting one soon.
Yeah.
I think Phil was talking about it when Sydney and I were up there a week or so ago.
So your guy actually broke out the rope and
yep.
was able, now did he tie you to something or were you just bound?
Originally it was to a chair, just a fairly simple chair tie to start things going. And then it gradually became more and more in depth with hog ties or with, I guess it would be child's play shibari, because it wasn't as intricate as shibari, but he certainly took his time, and which surprisingly we never got caught by my parents. But
that would be an interesting one to explain. He jumps in the closet real quick to hide because he knows he's about to get in trouble for tying you up, and there you are tied to a chair. And your parents.
I wonder how my parents never found out about many a thing.
Oh, thank goodness. Now, you mentioned shibari, and here's something kind of interesting that I found out in doing some research about bondage and stuff like that. I always called it shibari as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've been taught that term through people in the industry and stuff to that effect. And mm-hmm. in doing my research on the computer, I actually found out that shibari is not actually the art of rope binding.
Really?
That is a Western term that has been sort of made up, I guess, by us in some way. Shibari is a Japanese word that means to tie, like as a verb. But
okay.
But the Japanese art of tight binding someone using intricate knots and whatnot is actually called kinbaku.
Well, I see why we call it shibari. It's easier to say.
Kinbaku is, and it doesn't say, shibari sounds a little sexier too.
Is it kinbaku?
Kinbaku. And it translated in Japanese, it means the beauty of tight binding.
Nice. Very nice.
And I, you know, a lot of our rope binding and all that stuff all stems from kinbaku, which goes back to ancient times in Japan. That there are watercolors and artwork representing intricate knotwork on females going back hundreds and hundreds of years.
Incredible.
Yeah, and that's so super cool. I wouldn't mind getting my hands on some of that kind of artwork. That would be, I mean, that's something I'd put up in my house.
Yeah, it'd be stunning.
That would be just awesome, just to, like, you know, in the bedroom or something like that, just some really cool old Japanese water colors of women all tied up in various intricate knotwork and stuff like that. So, yeah, I found that out, that shibari and kenbaku are literally two different things, that one is a verb and one is the actual art form itself.
That's great information. Never knew that.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to find on these interwebs.
Just mean you're doing your research and the rest of us aren't. We're just going with the flow. So you're gonna have all the proper terms and you're gonna show us all up.
I'm not gonna be the one to walk into a dungeon and say a single thing to a master who wants to harness me or rope me in any way. And if he says shibari, then it's shibari it is. I'm not saying a word.
Come on, put up a little fight, it's fun.
You look him in the eye and say, you've got that wrong, it's kenbaku.
He's like, all right, we're going to gag you first then.
So I'm not putting myself in that kind of predicament.
Touche.
So what other kind of bondage, like, now that you've moved on from being 16 and this first experience and throughout your young adulthood, learning more and more about bondage and stuff like that, what do you find yourself doing now, let's say, when you're working with a bottom? Like, do you find using bondage in order to generate more submissiveness from them is beneficial?
I guess it really depends on their flexibility. Unfortunately, most submissives aren't as flexible as I was in my younger years. I'm not as much anymore either.
That's true. We were all a little bit more limber back then.
And, of course, it also depends on how ornery they are and how much they like to move around. I know there is one that Sydney and I have played with before that likes to move around a lot, so he's always best kept tightly tied as much as possible. Of course, it's a lot harder in bondage situations for freestyle bondage in order to get to certain anatomy, since I do a lot more femdom work, which would include CBT.
Right.
That if they're hog-tied, I can't really get to those parts, so that would cause more restraining as far as St. Andrew's crosses, or any strapados, perhaps. I don't know. I don't incorporate it too terribly much, since most femdom stuff that I do in most sessions would be with a male bottom. And I prefer seeing ladies up and tied up in rope. I just think it's more of a sensual aspect than a femdom type of aspect, really.
Yeah, I think it's more aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
Especially if you can... I don't know. There is definitely something more erotic about a woman tied up than a man. I'm just saying my personal preference. I know there's plenty of.
No, being sexist. Just saying, women look better in ropes. Women look better naked too. it's that damsel in distress whole fetishism.
It is. It's like those silent movies of the woman tied to the train tracks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's that whole, she's fully submitted. There's nothing she can do. You have full control over what happens to her from that point forward. And there's something really sexy about a woman being in that position.
Yeah, and I think a lot of like the silent movies or the cops and robbers type of thing, or movie scenes with break-ins, basically put that in the back of a lot of people's minds and a lot of children's minds, even when they're, young, early teens and whatnot, watching that, it might have just basically transplanted something that triggers their imagination sexually later on in adulthood.
One thing I learned also that I thought was kind of interesting in trying to look up some history on bondage and stuff like that is that here in the United States, and this is not a time period that we're proud of, but that a lot of what became the sexual fantasy and sexual fetish of bondage here in the United States came from slavery.
Really?
mentioned that during the 17 and 1800s, white male slave, you know, slave owners would keep their female slaves bound and tied and shackled and stuff to that effect in order to exude their dominance over them and use them for sexual pleasure. And that it came became sort of ingrained in the male culture in the early 17 and 1800s for a long time, that in order to get a woman to submit, they had to be bound.
I can see that.
Yeah. So, like, it's not a good memory that we have in the U.S., but it did, I guess that's kind of how it started here and led into what it's become nowadays, which is more a mutual pleasurable event as opposed to
one-sided,
yeah.
Yeah, very forced.
Yeah, but there's still something about that forcing someone into submission through binding that is a turn-on.
It's just like it.
People like it.
It's a play on power and control. And it's something that, I mean, as long as you're comfortable with one another, it can be mutually sexually pleasurable for both people then, as long as you're willing and able to submit to it.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, babe.
I totally agree with you.
I'm so glad you called us tonight. I really appreciate it. It's been
you guys are doing fucking awesome, and I wish you'd stop getting sick. I feel so bad for you.
Stop getting sick, too. I've decided to put myself on a regimen of vitamins and see if I can start eating a little better and see if I can get through this. I haven't been this sick in years, so it's kind of an odd thing that it all kind of popped
up. The weather change isn't helping either.
Yeah, and I think moving back to Florida had a lot to do with it, you know, coming back to a climate that, you know, we stay mostly with a high level of humidity and heat, and then as soon as we get dry and cold, everybody gets sick. So it just happens. It is what it is. I even got a flu shot this year, damn it.
Maybe that was it. I don't know. I've heard people that, you know, I normally get a flu shot and I'm fine, but I've also heard people say they get them and then they get sick right afterwards.
Yeah, it very well could be, because it was just a couple weeks ago that I got the flu shot, and that absolutely could have led to it. Who knows? It could have been anything. All I know is I had to go to the doctor, I'm on the antibiotics, and I'm getting better, and the voice sounds a little sexier for a while.
At least there's nothing wrong with that part right there. The sexy voice is awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, everybody listening needs to wish Miss Lovely Foxy Moxie a speedy recovery and her broken toe.
And my broken toe, which in the which I broke in the chaos that was election night. I was doing a little bit of a dance trying to get from the bathroom back to the in front of the TV, you know, on pins and needles, trying to rush back and kick the wall.
Jesus, woman.
Which I've done hundreds and hundreds of times, and this is my first break. So, on it as a lesson learned.
At least you're looking on the bright side.
I have to, because at some point it has to become comfortable when things just keep happening over and over again. At some point, you just start laughing because you're like, well, there's another thing.
Laugh to keep from crying.
Exactly. Laughter is the best medicine.
Right,
hello. Thanks, honey. I'm going to let you go.
Oh, and thank you so much, gorgeous.
I love you, and I can't wait to see you again soon.
Come hang out.
Better before I spread any disease toward to anybody.
We'll get a wheelchair for you, and we'll hang out. It'll be fun, I swear.
Hey, that's a whole fetish in its own right.
We'll get better, doll. Have a great night tonight. Love the show. It's doing an amazing job.
Thanks, Miss Whitney. Appreciate it. Love you, dear.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, for those of you who are just tuning in, that was Miss Whitney Morgan. She is the host, one of the co-hosts of Taboo Fetish Talk, the original Taboo Fetish Talk. She is also one of the co-founders of the station that you're listening to now, Taboo Fetish Talk. And she's the one her and Sydney Screams that gave me the opportunity to start this program and get myself out there and bring a little bit of entertainment and a little bit of information to all of you. Let's go ahead and give out some information on how to get in touch with us tonight. If you're listening live on your computer, of course, you can join us in the chat room. I see several people on here tonight. And you can give us a call at any point at area code 213-943-3601. Again, that number is area code 213-943-3601.
Welcome to Taboo Fetish Talk Radio. Interested in advertising on Taboo Fetish Talk Radio? It's easy. Send us an email at taboofetishtalk@gmail.com for rates and information.
Yeah, so guys, if you're looking to be an advertiser on Taboo Fetish Talk, that's how to get in touch with them. You can go to taboofetishtalkradio.com or send an email to taboofetishtalk@gmail.com. Back to bondage for a little bit here. Whitney and I and Crow were talking a little bit about the different ways that there's empowerment and submission in bondage. And it's a common component in sadomasochism play, but also serves various different functions when playing sexually or non-sexually. It can be used to stop a masochist from moving, keep them from trying to squirm away from you during the during a sensation play or impact play, or a combination of anything thereof. For people who are into power exchange, the physical restraint of themselves or another person enhances the feeling of loss of control or power that they have over another. Depending on the nature of the play, there may or not be any sexual contact or release at the end of the session. It doesn't necessarily have to lead to that point. Many people get aesthetic pleasure from good rope bondage. Japanese rope bondage, as we were talking about before, is a subject all in itself that we'll get into in a little bit. Bondage can be used, you know, sometimes by couples as just a sexual enhancement technique to prolong sex, or in these cases, they can use it as a session that would end in some sort of sexual release, either through masturbation or intercourse of some kind.
It's nice to mix it up every now and then.
Mix it up, absolutely. Bring a little spice into the bedroom, so to speak.
Unless you're, you know, a continual kinkster, and then that's just almost vanilla.
No, well, even if you're a continual kinkster and fetishist, at some point you're using bondage in what you're doing anyway. I mean, unless you've got a really good submissive that can hold still really well, you're going to use it in some form during impact or cessation play.
That's the aspect of discipline.
Absolutely. That's where discipline would be involved, where bondage would lead to discipline in the training of your submissive or your bottom to...
Well, train them not to move when they're getting...
Exactly. Exactly. Now, here's the, you know what I learned? That I had no idea necessarily that there were different specific types of bondage. I mean, yeah, I knew about rope bondage and restraints and stuff like that, but I didn't realize that they actually break it down into specific categories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's 7 different main categories for bondage.
Wow.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, 7, it's not that much, but you group a lot of things into each one of these. Bondage that would bondage that pulls parts of the body together through ropes, chains, and harnesses is one type. So that would be restrictive in a way. That would be pulling parts of the body close, like, you know, putting an arm to a thigh or something to that effect. Somewhat mummification would fall into that category. Things like that. Bondage that spreads parts of the body apart is another type. So that would be your St. Andrew's crosses, your spreader bars. That would be, well, I'm trying to think. That would be maybe a wrist to an ankle.
Okay.
Would be sort of a type of spreading apart the body in some way. I don't know, that kind of falls in both categories, but
yeah,
something to that effect. And then that bondage that would specifically tie a body down to another object, such as a chair or some type of stocks, a stockade of some sort, a table, a bench. Trying to think of the other things that we're familiar with. A bench, a chair, a bed, obviously a bed.
How can we forget a bed?
I know. Well, beds seem so vanilla in this world, don't they? And then we've got suspension bonding. And we see a lot of that happening down at the woodshed. It's fascinating. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. Bondage that suspends the body from another object. That is all part of the suspension. And then we've got another kind of bondage that restricts normal movement, such as hobble skirts, which is something new that I didn't know about, that I had to look a little bit more into. Handcuffs, like if you handcuff somebody to something or just their wrists together in general, that would be a type of restrictive movement, a way that they can't get away from you or wiggle away or move a specific body part away from you, from their dominant or their top. And then even though you can classify mummification as pulling parts of the body together in the first of the classifications of bondage, they do have a listed on here that bondage that wraps the whole body or part of it in plastic, saran wrap, cling film, anything, gaffer tape, duct tape, anything to that effect. They actually make specific tapes for bondage, which is basically just gaffer tape, but they just make it in pretty colors now.
Great designs.
So mummification would be that. And then bondage that provides a confined, inescapable space. And this is going to be stuff like your cagings, you know, cages, okay, or a box that you put somebody in, or a closet, or anything that you're putting the whole body into that restricts their movement from being able to move about freely. And we all know this probably, but there might be some listeners out there who aren't familiar. And the fact that you can design an entire room around this.
Really? You mean,
a room designed to allow people to act out their bondage fantasies, known as
a dungeon.
A dungeon.
I was picturing our bedroom.
You were picturing the bedroom. Okay.
I'm like, oh, really? Our bedroom? That'd be awesome. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. One day our bedroom probably will look a lot like your typical dungeon.
Or push like a button on the wall, like things just start changing, flipping.
Like James Bond, like you push the button, and instead of the weapons, it's all the implements and everything.
Yeah. And the dresser flips out, it's like there's just a row of floggers.
Yeah.
Bed flips over, the shackles.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, a dungeon is a very specific part of bondage, because you're going to need somewhere to put all these great things that you've got, these ropes, these chains, straps, harnesses, spreader bars, St. Andrew's crosses, chairs, stockades, benches. You got to have somewhere to put all this stuff. So let's all get out and build ourselves a dungeon. You know how they got Habitat for Humanity? Maybe we should start getting the BDSM community together and start going around building dungeons for people in need. What do you think about that?
Be pretty interesting.
It'd be pretty freaking amazing is what it would be.
I'm sure there's some legal problems. Oh, Reed Dallas is
Dallas is in our chat room right now, and it has a friend back in North Carolina that turned an extra bedroom in, of their house into a dungeon. That's super cool. I do have an extra bedroom in my home that one day will more than likely become, well, it's either going to be a nursery one day, if babies are ever involved in my life, or a dungeon. I got to figure out what my priorities are.
And no, we're not going to dress the kid in 50 Shades.
And no, my child's not going to be dressed in 50 Shades of Grey clothing.
And their bedroom isn't going to be the dungeon.
No, we're not going to be using the crib as a portable dungeon device. Although, a crib
where are we going with this?
Can absolutely be used in bondage, I would say, in the adult atmosphere. So if you've got...
Goddamn pervertibles.
Pervertibles. I love that word. I love that term. You can turn just about anything into sex toy of some sort. The Red Room. What a great name for a dungeon. I like that. Dallas's friend called their dungeon the Red Room. They've got a Red Room over at the Woodshed Orlando.
Yeah.
Some call it the Dragon Room. Some call it the Red Room. You know, bondage, you know, sometimes it's just
not open.
It's open on Saturdays. I don't know what you're talking about.
Sometimes.
See, bondage, there's another form of bondage that didn't make it into the seven categories, and I find this one a little bit fascinating. And I've actually seen someone at the Woodshed practicing this on themselves. Now, granted, they may have been practicing for reasons of learning Kinbaku or Shibari, as most of us know it, learning the knot work themselves and stuff like that. But self bondage is a fetish in of itself. Mm. By definition, this is a very risky activity, since the risk that the practitioner might not be able to release themselves at the end of the session is very high. So,
what kind of release?
Yeah. Well, depending on how they've bound themselves, they may not be able to achieve what it is they were going for. But so I'm going to say that practicing self bondage, have a buddy on speed dial, or somebody willing to check in on you the next day.
Or, you know, keep a good pair of scissors close to you.
Yeah. A good pair. Yeah, a knife.
Yeah. Something you get
out. some way to get out of it. That's a little bit, you know, we've gone over a lot of what there has to do with bondage and the different categories and how it's used in sexual activity and stuff like that. And I kind of want to talk a little bit about discipline itself too, because discipline is not something, I've said this a couple of times already, but I didn't realize that it was lumped into the bondage category. And discipline, by definition, is the use of rules and punishment to control overt behavior, and which makes sense. I mean, discipline is self-explanatory. We know what discipline is. Growing up as a child, we're disciplined by our parents, we're disciplined by teachers, we're disciplined by... But what this is talking about specifically is applying it to the fetish of your life, or applying it to something sexual in your life. Because not every fetish is sexual, and not all sexual activity is a fetish. Punishment can be pain caused physically, such as caning, and humiliation caused physically, such as, and you're going to love this example they gave, an enema. So that's not necessarily the type of humiliation I would inflict on somebody that I was trying to train or discipline, but I can definitely see why it's lumped into the humiliation category, enemas. Oh, goodness. And then, so you've got physical pain, you've got humiliation, and then you've got psychological pain, such as public exposure or a loss of freedom caused physically, such as chaining your bottom or your submissive to the foot of the bed, or because they did something wrong. They I don't know, they snored when they were sleeping, or they whatever it was that pissed you off.
Might have to get some rub then.
That can be psychological discipline, and that you're trying to, in the way that you would train an animal, let's say, you're giving them sort of a reward and a punishment system in place as part of discipline. So you're going to reward the good behavior, but then you're going to punish the bad behavior.
Okay.
And that's all considered psychological. So pain, humiliation, and psychological discipline. Punishment is often given in a response to some rule being broken. Rules can be applied randomly by dominants as a tool for disorienting a sub, or by a sadist as a pretext to inflicting punishment. And our sadist friend Sir Crow knows all about that. you say. However, a disciplinarian is one who enjoys gaining control over someone's physical actions and apparent behavior by training them to obey clear and stated rules, which is what we were talking about, putting a system, sometimes a system in place of reward and punishment behavior. Bondage, when used as a punishment, is still considered bondage, even though it's now fallen into the discipline category. Because it's being done in response to a rule being broken, that's what makes it part of the discipline. Punishment does not need to be physical. It can be the loss of privileges, such as having an orgasm this month. Oh, God, a month?
Oh, wow.
I don't know about that. That's pretty harsh. Now, I've put some people in cuckold before and kept them for maybe several days or a couple of weeks at a time from experiencing an orgasm or touching themselves in any way, but a month seems a little extreme. They would have really had to broken one of my rules for that.
Yes, yeah, pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. I can't imagine if you do that to me, Sir Crow, as a punishment. I'd have to break that rule. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't.
You can also use it. You know, a lot of doms use this. A lot of fem doms use it, and male dominance as well. You can be ordered to do a specific task, such as, like, let's say when you write, you know, like when you break the rules in school and they make you write something on the blackboard.
Write lines.
Yes. It can be a task like that, something that's uncomfortable and annoying for you to do, but it's not physically demanding of you to do.
Yeah. I can see a lot of littles enjoying something like that.
A lot of littles, yeah. The threat of further punishment, if not finished correctly, like, say, writing lines on a chalkboard or something like that, can exalt verbal humiliation, I would say. Or really, I mean, any act that you can inflict on the submissive or the bottom to get them to inflict something upon themselves that they don't like is still part of discipline. Of course, one person's punishment can also sometimes be another person's reward. So I would say for some people, let's say the punishment was receiving 20 lashes, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, for some of us that are masochists, that's not necessarily going to be a punishment. So when disciplining a masochist, I would say that you're probably going to fall more into restriction psychological restriction from what it is that they enjoy the most. So for some people, spanking them or a flogging or something like that is definitely going to be a way to discipline them, but others, it's definitely going to be perhaps the beginning of a lovely evening. Many dominant and submissive relationships, I think, include the pretense of punishment as an item of play in its own right. You know, like acts that can pretend to constitute punishment, but they don't really, they're more of a reward or they're more of a mutual play experience.
Yeah.
Like you could say something to somebody like, you could say something like, oh, I don't know, you've been a bad girl, I'm going to spank you for that. Well,
come on, use your imagination. You can do better.
Well, I'm just saying that, as an example, like, you could say, you know, okay, you've been a bad girl, and I'm gonna spank you, because you, let's say that month of coming restriction was in play because you couldn't hold off coming, and you're gonna have to, you know, stay still, and I'm gonna tie you up, and all of these things, just from the way they sound, are.
Oh, we have a caller.
Yeah, we have a caller.
We apparently had a caller for a while.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr.
We got caught up.
Very sorry. I'll be with you in just a moment, Mr. Jeeves. But yeah, all these things that you could say to someone without the actual act of binding them can still fall into that discipline category itself. I'm going to go ahead and take this call because they've been holding for a while, and I've been just rambling on and on about discipline because I happen to like it, and we just lost our caller.
Call back.
Call us back, Mr. G's, please. So, yeah, going back, on the surface, it sounds like punishment, but we as kinky people, we know better that saying stuff like that to different people who are into dominance and submission are... you know, yeah, I guess there's a gray area there. So, you know, what do you think about using bondage as foreplay?
It's definitely, I mean, I've never really been very big with bondage myself. I'm still learning a lot of the basics. It definitely, I mean, it is very hot. When I was younger, I had this really good pair of shackles that I'm very sad broke.
Oh no.
Yeah, long story behind them, but whatever. So like I, you know, in high school, we're like much like Whitney, there was, you know, having fun experimenting with, you know, new BDSM stuff. And I had some female friends that happened to enjoy playing with them as well. So we were just, nothing ever crazy, but it was mostly, you know, just handcuffing them in my bed and whatnot. So, yeah, I need to find another pair. They were great.
They were actual shackles.
Yeah, like...
like, full-on metal.
Yeah, once just, they were yeah. on you, and which is half the reason they were broke, you couldn't get them off without a key. So...
I love it.
Yeah, I need to get another pair of them.
I think that's a good idea. I happened to see a pair on Etsy recently that the guy powder coats them with a paint finish, and so you can actually order your shackles that are, you know, crafted of hardcore steel, and they're not going to break on you, basically, and crafted of hardcore steel, but you can get them in pretty pink, or...
or that link.
Yeah.
Do you know, happen to know off the top of your head? Do you have it saved?
Do I have it? Do I know the link off
like,
the top
well,
of my head?
Do you have it saved somewhere?
Do I have it saved? No, but if you... if
I'm going to look that up. Do you know...
You want to... Yeah, it was on Etsy. All and right. it was, I was searching in the BDSM category.
There's a category for BDSM on Etsy?
Yes, there absolutely is. They have there are fantastic crafters out
the
there.
Fuck?
There are fantastic crafters out there that sell their goods on many different websites. If they don't have their own website hosted that will use sites such as Etsy and or eBay or not eBay, but what's the one that's for adults? Banned from eBay, I think it's called, is an auction site for certain items that you can't find on eBay anymore due to eBay's restrictions. But yeah, it was on Etsy, and it was, you know, solid steel restraints that are powder coated in any color you want. I thought that was awesome. And kind of the reason I wanted to ask you what you thought about the foreplay, so to speak, is because, you know, I know in a lot of couples incorporate bondage into their sex lives without realizing necessarily what they're that it's bondage specifically that that's what they're doing, you know.
I mean, a lot of like the early bondage that could be, you know, considered foreplay, I guess to me it's always seemed a little vanilla.
Yeah.
Even though it's, oh, E-band. That's what it was.
Yes, thank you. The name of the site is E-band. If you're looking for adult entertainment in the BDSM category or any type of fetish or something like that that they no longer carry or allow to be sold on eBay, the name of the site is eband.com. Thanks, Whitney. I appreciate that.
But, yeah, for me it seems like it's almost vanilla in a way.
Well, for those of us who have delved a little bit further, yeah, it can be. But you got to remember that 80% of the population out there is still pretty darn vanilla.
Yeah, to be fair,
and to them,
50 Shades is considered edgy to a lot of people.
Exactly.
So, whereas we're like, oh, that's day one child's play.
Exactly.
This is boring.
So, yeah, couples do incorporate bondage into their sex lives, you know, sporadically, maybe without not even realizing it, or some of us a little bit more regularly than others. And it can really bring two people a little bit closer together. It, like Whitney was mentioning earlier, forms trust. It takes trust to allow this ritual to take place between two people. It can help affirm the relationship, bring you closer together. It can be a sex game, I don't know, a rape fantasy, something to just help your partner act out a sexual fantasy that they have. Bedroom bondage games are commonly used as foreplay. It definitely requires trust. It requires surrender of control. The main feature, I would say, of sexual bondage is that it renders the restrained person vulnerable to a variety of sex acts. And it renders them unable to interfere in any ensuing sexual activity that's about to occur. The restrained partner is more dependent now for their sexual satisfaction on the actions of their partner, who may treat the restrained partner as their sex object. Objectification has a lot to do with bondage, I would say, the fact that the restrained person has now become the sex toy themselves of the dominant or the top, the person doing the restraining. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to it. Definitely, I mean, the idea of them being your plaything is one of those things that a lot of people enjoy. I mean, I've gotten to the point where, you know, when I'm in the middle of the scene, you know, you're my new plaything. There, that mindset does switch in there sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for those people out there that are wondering, you know, do I have to go out and, you know, buy the, you know, $400 restraints and the manacles and the shackles and all that kind of stuff? Well, no, you don't. It can be they're worth it. But bondage can be relatively simple in its application, I would say. Improvise, people. This is the way to do it. You can use household items and, you know, you don't have to have a lot of experience. I mean, you want to be a little careful. You don't want to the first time out physically cause harm to your partner that they don't enjoy. But, you know, some of the things that we mentioned before, you know, as women, we have scarves and stuff like that laying around that can be used to restrain the wrists, blindfold someone. You know, in the movies, your typical bondage scene usually is tying someone to a bedpost. Spread eagle. What I personally have noticed in mainstream media when it comes to any kind of bondage scene in a movie or something like that is you don't necessarily, even though I'd say it's probably more common practice for a female to be a submissive, I'm not saying all females are submissive. I'm just saying that you'll probably find a larger majority of submissives in this community are women, just, you know, maybe by a fraction, but still you'll find a lot. I think it's a bigger number. But in the movies, if you'll notice, it's always the guy that's being tied down, because I think that as men, even if you're a dominant personality, there's something inside of you that really wants the woman to tie you up and use you for her pleasure and leave you spent.
I guess I can kind of understand that sentiment.
I'm just saying that that's what I've noticed in the media. I've never really seen that many scenes outside of the adult entertainment industry involving the bondage of a female. In mainstream media, it's usually
corporate fat guy that's all of a sudden has a kinking streak and gets left tied up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I can understand. I think that's more the humiliation to it.
Sure.
And maybe it says something about our social, commentary, where it's like, hey, you're not a man's man if you let someone take advantage of you, kind of thing.
Yeah, that could be.
So, it could just be, or just maybe that particular director just happens to be a bottom.
I know that in my personal experiences as a young adult and growing older and stuff like that, I'd say it's probably a 70-30 split. It's harder for me to come across the dominant personality that I'm looking for most of the time in a relationship.
Yeah.
It seems to be a little bit easier to come across a male submissive in a relationship atmosphere. Because I'm a switch, and for those of you who don't know what that is, that means I do both topping and bottoming. I am both a dominant and a submissive. So I'd say in my personal life, involving my intimate relationship with a man or a woman, that I prefer to be the submissive. In my relationships that aren't personal, that aren't boyfriends or girlfriends, I am the dominant when it comes to any type of play that I have with someone else or something to that effect. So, I switch back and forth between those roles in my daily life. There, most of the day when I'm working with clients or something like that, on the computer, just online, stuff like that, I'm the dominant personality that's putting them through the psychological discipline, the mental bondage, the stuff like that. But then in my personal relationships with my boyfriend, Sir Crow, I'm the submissive type.
Yeah.
and that's what he likes. So, but it's easy. Like I was saying, you don't have to run out right away and buy all the expensive equipment to start getting into bondage and discipline.
Something as simple as a belt.
A belt is a great way to bind somebody. Handcuffs are relatively easy to come across.
Even if they are the crappy ones you get from Spencer's that have the auto lock,
Yeah, that have the self-release in them.
Yeah, it's an option.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a break from talking for just a second here and take a call. Hi, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Frisky Fridays. This is Foxy Moxie. Hello? Caller, can you hear me? I can hear you breathing.
That's not a sketch.
I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there. Do we have Boylan on the line? Okay, this could be somebody who just wants to call in and listen to the show. Maybe they're not able to get to their computer. So I'm going to go ahead and put them on hold and let them continue listening unless they want to chime in at any point here.
Nope.
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and throw you on hold. Maybe you're just calling in to listen to the show. All right. We'll just go ahead and let them listen in then. So what are other things that are common? Blindfolds. That's common. And the things that you can do once you have somebody bound in a specific position are kind of endless. I mean, outside of, let's say, impact play, the things that you can do when you've got somebody bound and tied, you can masturbate them. You can, you know, like, whatever, finger them, oral sex, use toys on them, have sex with somebody who's bound up. You can also tease or tickle someone while they're bound. I mean, I know teasing and tickling is a fetish in and of itself, and that bondage, excuse me, bondage is a big part of it, because you want to try to restrain the person that you're about to inflict that teasing and that tickling upon.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if this is necessarily gospel, but thinking about what I learned about bondage becoming sort of a brought to the United States and becoming a sexual fetish based on, you know, the aspects of slavery way back in the day and stuff like that. I mean, you can think back even further into medieval times. Think about, you know, the Inquisition and stuff to that effect.
The Spanish Inquisition.
And, you know, I'm sure the torturers would be considered sadists nowadays and would find other outlets, we would say. And but I got to say, my introduction, and like I said, I don't know if this is gospel, but I'm going to say what brought bondage more mainstream in the last couple of decades is going to be, as far as I'm concerned, is the male gay population. Mm-hmm. I think back to leather bars and seeing men dressed in their bondage strappings made of leather and metal and stuff like that for the first time. And you really started to see that come about in, say, like the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. So I'd say the last century, the latter half of the last century, I'm going to attribute bondage becoming more mainstream and more acceptable by the gay cultures. Would you agree with that?
I was never really around for that part of, I mean, it's a little before my time. I could definitely see, like, I know the old stereotypes kind of
the leather man stereotype,
the leather gay man, the gay man in all leather assless chaps, and you know that whole thing. It's kind of been passed down, so I can see how it would tie in.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah. Leather men were among the first groups of people, evidently, to make obvious hints at their taste for bondage in public. They were the first ones to bring it out of the bedroom. Other groups, including pansexuals and heterosexual BDSM enthusiasts, later followed suit. But from what I was able to research and from my own personal experience, the early public displays were mainly limited to the wearing of certain fashion items, such as collars, big cuffs, leather harnesses, stuff to that effect. But over time, more explicit displays started happening. The most prominent examples are the big LGBT street fairs that we have nowadays. And the biggest one, well, I don't know if it's the largest one, but it's probably the most famous one that I can think of, happens in San Francisco during the Folsom Street Fair. And that's where the big leather community comes out, and you'll see people in bondage gear, whether they're being led around on a lead and a collar, a leash and a collar or something like that. And I really think, and you know, according to any of the research I found, that's really all being attributed to the LGBT community itself. Exhibitionist displays are another manifestation of public bondage. They're typically undertaken by individuals who fetishize public displays of sex and sexuality, but some exhibitionist bondage is done as a social or a political statement. I think about thinking about social political statements, I think about PETA. and how they'll have models restrained or bound or something like that to sort of play into what,
how we torture
how we treat animals and stuff to that effect. So there's different way, you know, different public displays of bondage, but BDSM clubs themselves are sort of, I mean, it's public, but it's sort of, it's private. It's sort of semi-public. You know, people go to a dungeon or they meet in a private space or a play party, something like that. Something that's considered private, but features open spaces where play occurs and allows other people to watch. And here locally in Orlando, we've got, you know, we've got the Woodshed Orlando. I know that there's, you know, large clubs in other areas as well.
Just all of Central Florida in general.
We're lucky in Central Florida.
Yeah.
From Fort Lauderdale to Tampa to, you know what I mean? We're in Miami. We're lucky that we have such a large community that pulls together and isn't afraid to be themselves around each other.
I mean, in Tampa, you have all the Tampa fetish masquerade balls every couple months. Which are, you know, held at just normal clubs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know the Castle will do it in Tampa. What's the other one? The Taboo?
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's some other clubs in Ybor that they're just fetish nights kind of thing. They're you know, little mini fetish parties. And it's a way of people who might be not necessarily in the lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
You know, being shown what it really is with a grain of, you know, with some form of skewed vision there, because a lot of it is, I mean, like we've talked about before, it's a bunch of goth kids.
Yeah, we run into that a lot in this area. I don't know if it's like that around the country and around the world. But yeah, Florida, that's a good one. Whitney Morgan says, Florida, where the F stands for fetish. I don't know if it's the heat. I don't know what it is, but there's something a little bit kinkier about Florida. I don't know if it's because we're shaped as a penis. I don't know.
The flaccid penis.
The flaccid penis of the United States, that is Florida. But we're definitely lucky down here. One thing that we want to talk about a little bit.
Takes 3 days to vote.
Yeah, except for when it comes to elections. For some reason, we can't get that together. But another thing we want to talk about when it comes to bondage, and this is something that we really should maybe have gone over earlier, but it just came to mind now, is the safety involved.
Safety is a huge key when you're doing anything in the BDSM community.
Yeah. And I'm just going to read this word for word because I agree with this wholeheartedly. Many people regard bondage as safer when conducted between sober, trusted partners who are fully aware of the risks involved and the precautions necessary to ensue safety, such as informed consent. Partners who are in committed relationships may have a greater basis for trusting each other. Performing acts in a supervised location, such as a dungeon or with a group of trusted friends, will also increase the safety. There's a subculture of people who seek out others interested in bondage and pursue such activities with people they don't know that well. And that subculture, you know, it's really given rise to the safe, sane, and consensual credo, which is safer, sane, and consensual, considering that the safe is somewhat impossible necessarily, but
it's not always going to be 100% safe, but by knowing what you're doing, being prepared, you know, always be prepared for something to go wrong. I mean, your most experienced doms still have moments where they might, you know, something could go wrong.
Absolutely.
Always be prepared for anything you're doing. Don't try it something that you don't know how to do.
Exactly.
Specifically something like suspension or underwater bondage.
Yeah, don't go to the extremes without learning from a professional.
Yeah, and I mean, and on that hand, if you can get a professional to get involved with it and to supervise you, example, you know, something like the woodshed or, you know, just having someone around you that can be there in case of emergency, that can help you. Because, I mean, if you've never, you know, had a moment where something went wrong, you could panic. And if you panic while something, you know, someone's strung up, you know, hurting themselves, and you panic and freak out, well, you're only hurting your bottom.
Exactly. And you don't want to do that.
So, I mean, always, you know.
So, well, yeah. So along those lines, let's go through some of the safety precautions. You want the use of a safe word or some clear way that your bottom or the person being restrained can indicate actual distress and wish to discontinue or stop what's happening. So
safe word is banana.
So always have a safe word in place. Never leave a bound person alone. Okay. Well, there's a little bit of bending to that. I do know of occurrences of play. excuse me, where someone will leave someone bound and then leave the room for a few minutes. I think what I'm really trying to say by never leave a bound person alone is for, I'd say, a period longer than 10 or 15 minutes, don't leave someone because they could be in a position in which struggling can cause harm to themselves. They could panic. They could...
I would generally, I mean, in general, just say don't leave. I've heard stories from friends who have, you know, been bound by someone that didn't know what they were doing, and then they left them.
Yeah, exactly.
They just flat out left them alone. And it scared them so much that they never even wanted to touch anything in the BDSM lifestyle again. Even though they, you know, they generally did, you know, they might have had fun with it. It just scared them away from it so bad. So one experience could hurt someone. And, you know, it could scar them in ways that you don't even realize.
Another thing that I think we should probably emphasize, especially if you're not necessarily an expert in what you're doing, if you're just kind of playing around or what have you, is avoid putting someone in a position or in any type of restraint which will induce postural asphyxia. And if you don't know what that means, that's cutting off the blood supply to a specific part of the body. You don't, and so, you know, I've seen masters of their craft be very specific with the placements of their restraints and very specific with avoiding certain areas because you don't want to cut off the blood flow to a limb, to the head. To, you know, you don't want to do that because you're going to end up causing permanent nerve damage and other, God, sometimes fatal things could happen. I mean, at the worst, you're going to make somebody's foot fall asleep and, or for God's sakes, if you fell when someone leaves you alone and you end up getting a concussion,
like
someone we know. And you don't want these things to happen. So if you don't know what you're doing, look it up, do the research, find a master. Don't tie it too tight. Try to avoid joints and stuff like that and avoid areas where. Hopefully most of us remember from anatomy classes that we have large veins and stuff running through our body because you don't want to limit the blood supply from one area to another because you're going to cause some major damage on somebody. Always remember, as Ms. Whitney Morgan is reminding us, to go 1 inch above the wrist and 1 above the elbow. Let me say that again. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
1 inch above the wrist and 1 inch above the elbow. Because you really want to stay away from the joints themselves because you could cause a break. You're going to cut off the blood supply and you're going to cause something terrible to happen. You also want to make sure that the person can change positions at least once every, say, half hour to an hour. You don't want to leave somebody restrained for an extended period of time for that same reason of causing that posterior asphyxia. You don't want to cut off those blood supplies for extended period of time. So at least once an hour, you need to remove if you have to, and then you can restrain the person again or restrain them from another area or something like that. But for medical reasons, no longer than an hour, I'm going to say a half hour to 45 minutes for it to before it really starts to affect someone. Making sure that someone can be released quickly in an emergency, have a way out. Have a way to get that person out of those restraints quickly in the case of emergency. Whether you've got scissors on hand, a knife, if you've got a safety latch on your leather restraints, or they make restraints out of polyester and stuff like that as well that have buckles and straps and things to that effect. But make sure that you've got a way that you can get that person out of those restraints quickly.
The knife is a perfect, you know, if you have, you know, you have to cut your nice rope. Oh, well, if it comes down to someone being, you know, in danger, take the risk, you know, you can always buy more rope.
Exactly.
I know some people are a little like, I don't want to ruin, this is cut to my exact length, I need it. And, yeah, they're afraid, you know, what are we going to do? If, you know, I don't want to cut my rope. It's a nice rope. I spent all this money on it. Some people are really just that frugal.
Too bad.
Yeah, just.
If that person is in stress, get them out.
They shouldn't even be in the community if they're that frugal.
If your person is in distress, if your bottom, if your submissive is in any type of distress, you get them out as soon as possible. Avoid restraints which impair breathing. This should be a given, but come on, people. I know that asphyxia can sometimes be a turn-on for some people, but let's try not to go there if we can. Gags, hoods, anything that blocks the mouth can become asphyxial. Ball gags, bits, anything like that. Anything that is hazardous for choking or could cause someone to vomit or anything like that, you try to avoid it. I mean, we're just going over the safety here, people. We want you to play safe. We want you to stay around, and we want the community to stay safe. And another thing, I know that there are parties in Florida that allow alcohol at the gatherings. I am happy to say that our local dungeon in Orlando does not allow alcohol on the premises, nor do they allow you to play if you are intoxicated. So try to remain sober. Don't use any alcohol or drugs if you're going to start putting someone in a bondage position or restrain them in any way. Let's not do that.
I would say anything, if you're doing anything that's kinky in any way,
yeah,
don't be under any sort of intoxication or, you know, be completely about your wits.
You need to start looking. You also need to be aware of the signs of distress, because when someone is bound or restrained or tied up with rope, they can go into, their endorphins can start to rush to a point where they go into a different space, that they've gone into their head and they're no longer aware of necessarily any physical reactions that their body is having to their bondage or their restraints. So a simple thing for you to do is maybe ask them if they're doing okay. And then you also want to look and check specific body parts and look for discoloration. Are they turning blue? Are they turning purple? Do they have white dots appearing on the skin? You can pinch the area to look for discoloration. Skin that's not getting enough oxygen will turn blue. If the blood can get in but can't get out, then that part of the body is going to turn purple. So those are two really important signs to look for. If someone's not getting oxygen to the limb, they're going to turn blue. If the blood's getting in, but you've got them bound in a way that the blood can't get out, then that area of the skin is going to turn purple. If your bottom's been gagged and cannot verbally communicate with you what's going on, if they want to try to say a safe word or something like that, you may want to come up with a different alternative. Have them hum something, like a specific tune, like Mary Had a Little Lamb or something like that. Just anything that you can come up with that they can physically show you through sound or through sight or whatever that they are in distress.
Yeah.
And then there's also ways that you want to think of preparing yourself for going into bondage and restraint. Most people don't think about this, but you want to eat first.
I've seen people, sugar out from scenes so many times.
Right.
They're like, I don't need to eat before I go out and play. And they're up for 3 minutes and they pass out.
What you want to do then is, if it looks like someone's going into some sort of shock or if they're about to faint during a long session of play, have them eat beforehand, but also have something on hand that has a high sugar content.
Mountain Dew,
orange juice is a standard to have on hand. Something that can quickly get nutrients and sugars back into that person's body to prevent them from going into any kind of shock. You want to have cutting tools on hand, a pair of EMT scissors, a good knife, something like that. And if you're using shackles or handcuffs or anything like that, have backup keys, people.
Yeah.
Have a set of backup keys for every implement that you have that you're using in your bondage rituals, because if you lose that key during play and you can't find it and your person's in distress, you got to get them out as fast as possible.
Usually when you buy a pair of handcuffs, it comes with two keys. Usually. Buy multiple pairs. Never can have too many.
Yeah, you can't have too many keys. I mean, I'm stressing that because I've been in a situation where back when I was a body piercer, this is a funny little anecdote. We had a woman come in who had been put in chastity by her significant other, who used a padlock to lock her labia piercings together. And lost the key. So, thank goodness she wasn't in a life or death situation that they were able to drive her down to us at the piercing parlor and we were able to get her free. But I've seen it happen. So have extra sets of keys on hand at all times. And if you're going to practice self-bondage, we talked about it before, make someone aware of what you're about to do and have someone available to check on you after a certain time frame or something like that so that, if something does go wrong, you've got a way out.
And again, stressing enough, always be safe, and just be ready for it. And if you don't know a knot, there's tons you can do, tons you can learn on the internet. If you want to practice it, there's grab some rope. You have a table leg. Chances are at home, practice on the table leg. Just try and get the use for the knot. Try and get a feel for it. There's tons of books, tons of web pages. I've seen YouTube videos explaining how to tie specific knots. Always know what you're doing ahead of time. Don't practice
a knot for the first time on someone.
Right.
Unless, you know, if they're completely okay with letting you practice something, make sure someone who knows the knot is around. But generally, you don't want to be like, I'm just going to pick up some rope and I'm going to tie you up. You know, that's going to end in disaster.
Yeah, it is.
Unless for some weird reason you're a natural rigger, that's not going to work.
You want to explain what rigger is? That's just a term.
Yeah, a rigger is just someone who, it's a general term that's thrown around the community. People who generally just play with rope, rig people up to either chairs or, you know, again, crosses, or generally just even, you know, suspension. Just a general term.
Okay. Speaking of terms, I guess, and stuff like that, you want to go over, like, some different things that are used in bondage? You've got your typical things, like ball gags, ball logs. That's a whole, that we could invent something called a ball log.
Isn't that like the name of something? That's like the name of the monster in Lord of the Rings, isn't it?
I have no idea. That's a little too geeky for me to know.
Okay, fair enough.
You got it. Okay, so ball gags, ball locks for your CBTs, bit gags, which I think are extremely sexy, and you can get a lot more verbalization through a bit gag than you can a ball gag. You got your bondage beds. You know what a bondage bed? You know, like a bed that falls into two main categories. Like you can use a standard bed that's got they make these restraints that go under them. It's like a big strap that goes under the mattress and then comes out at all four corners. And so you can spread eagle tie somebody that way. Or you've got actual like table type bondage beds that are padded and have like big eye hooks all the way around it for different types of restraining and stuff like that.
Okay.
Cuffs. We know all about, you know, that's
I
want
to get a pair of them.
That's a general one.
The bondage cuffs definitely look really comfortable.
I'd say the bondage mittens are something that I think are.
I just pictured someone like in bondage taking like a pie out of the oven.
No, not that kind of mitten. No, they're generally made of leather and they're padded and they're nice. So cuffs, mittens, harnesses, belts, hoods, bondage tape we've talked about, breast binding. There are specific implements made for that. I know that a lot of the Kenbaku and Shibari artists will do breast binding through the different intricate knot work, but there are very specific things made, tools made of metal. I'm trying to illustrate here.
You're totally grabbing your tip
I am
right
grabbing
now.
My boobs at the moment, trying to illustrate how breast bondage works. and where it would either a piece of wood or a piece of metal flanks the underside of the boob and of both breasts, excuse me, and then on top and would squish them and press down and form them into a shape that they don't normally come in.
Normally.
you've got your butt hook or your ass hooks.
Anal hooks,
thank you. Which generally have some sort of a ball on the end and are inserted into the anus, and then they have a big O-ring on one side that can be used for tying to another part of the body. Breast tying sucks. I agree. It's painful. It's very restrictive, and I agree, Whitney. Whitney's just mentioning in the chat room. Oh, God, there's so many other things. Chastity belts. We didn't talk about chastity belts. That's a whole other thing. Saran wrap.
I've seen people at the shed do saran
wrap. I've seen mummification with saran wrap. Cock rings, collars, corsets. I'm going in alphabetical order. D-ring. Dental forceps, which is a type of a metal appliance that forces the jaw open. You may have had it done at the dentist, but it can also be used in sexual practice for bondage. Some people would consider diapers part of a bondage ritual. Anal hooks do suck. I agree. You've got harnesses for your elbows, funnel gags, head harnesses, pony harnesses. I know that, Whitney, you like a little bit of the pony play. You think that's really sexy looking. I'm hoping you'll do a show on that sometime. Inflatable gags, leg spreaders, spreader bars, medical restraints. That's a whole other aspect of bondage to get that we didn't get a chance to get into. Mouth guards, muzzle gags, panic snaps, penis gags. Penis gags are going to be like anything that causes restriction or can go as far into urethral sounds. I don't know what a whitehead gag is. If you can expand on that for me, please, Miss Whitney Morgan. Posturing collars, which I think are gorgeous. Ring gags, ropes, obviously, shackles and fetters, sleep sacks. Oh, dental gags. Yeah. Stockades, straight jackets. That's a whole nother thing we didn't get into yet, straight jackets, and we don't have time for it. And suspension cuffs. So there's a wide range of tools out there. Head to your local adult store. Get on the internet. Start searching. Search BDSM. There's a ton of companies out there that sell these things, people. But do not use them unless you know what you're doing. Do your research. Find a master. Find a mentor. Find somebody willing to teach you. We've got just a couple minutes left in the show, so I want to let you know to be sure to tune in throughout the week for Taboo Fetish Talk's other shows. Tuesday nights, you want to join Blood as he brings you the bloodshed. Thursday nights, tune in for the original Taboo Fetish Talk with Sydney Screams and Miss Whitney Morgan. And, of course, we're here every Friday night for Frisky Fridays with me, Foxy Miss Moxie, and Sir Crow. And if you want to get in contact with me directly, you can email me at MsMox@MistressMoxie.com. That's MsMox at MistressMoxie.com. Please follow me on Twitter at Ms. Moxie. That's MsMoxxxi. You can find me on Facebook at MsMox.findom. That's MsMox.findom, FINDOMME. Please go ahead and find us on FetLife too. My name on FetLife is Flogging, FLOGGING, _ Moxie, MOXIE. And you can find Sir Crow on FetLife. His name is Crows Nevermore. I'm not going to spell that. Hopefully you can. Just remember that it's Crows, CROWS, Nevermore. And if you're interested in becoming a host, please visit a host with Taboo Fetish Talk Radio. Please visit them on the web at taboofetishtalkradio.com or send them an email directly to taboofetishtalk@gmail.com. We want to thank everyone. We want to thank especially Miss Whitney Morgan for calling in to us tonight and sharing her experiences. And next week, we'll be getting into the dominant and submissive side of BDSM. So be sure you tune in for that. That's going to be Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Anything you want to say, Crow?
Just thank you, all listeners. And again, thanks Whitney Morgan and Sydney Screams for allowing us to share our, information. We're definitely learning new stuff as well, as I'm sure many of you are. And we want to continue to emphasize learning. There's just so much that there is to learn about this.
Yeah, the more information we find out, the more information we'll pass along to you guys. Enjoy your Friday!
Yay!